Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
I'm Ari Melber, and we are reporting live from somewhere, as the saying goes, specifically Washington. Congress under new management after the bruising fight to elect Speaker McCarthy, and for all the talk among GOP hardliners about how that clash, remember they said that would really change things. It would upend the D.C. games or usher in a more accountable, less swampy leadership. That's what they said. Well, tonight for top Republicans, I can tell you it's business as usual. The same playbook the Republican Party used during the last time the Democrats were in the White House and they had the Congress. It's the brinksmanship that can rattle the economy. And some conservatives argue actually hurts them, too, that it drags down the GOP in the long run. I'm talking about another threat to exploit the financial rules and govern by ransom. The story involves some Beltway jargon that you've probably heard before. The once routine process where Congress confirms the spending that it's already passed, raising the debt ceiling. Now, Republicans, they still do that when they control the White House. They did it three times without much fuss, as the Post reported, under Trump. Then they flip around and, claiming principle, they'll threaten not to raise the roof if they then lose the White House. Cue Ted Cruz.
The rules of the Republican conference provide not that we will never raise the debt ceiling. It is not my position that we will never raise the debt ceiling. Rather, what the rules say is we will use the debt ceiling as leverage.
Aha. Ted Cruz admitting it's about leverage. That means just the power that comes from threatening to actually crash the economy. And these Republicans think that they have a credible threat that instead of raising the roof on the debt, they will burn down America's credit. In other words, if they don't get their way, and the roof is on fire, just let that mother burn. This is something of the Republican Party's moment for that classic song, but in a, well, more concerning manner. The goal is then to use that so-called leverage to do things that apparently they would not otherwise be able to do in our democracy, which is a sign that these things are unpopular, like slashing Social Security and Medicare. Now, McCarthy's holdouts demanded some of that as they tried to mess with his speaker bid, and he agreed not to raise the debt limit without major cuts like those. So this is what is being offered as the reason they need to take the country down this road again through this ransom process. Here's what we heard from these folks making threats.
We suspend the filibuster in the Senate so we could raise the debt ceiling. You know, that's not how regular finances work.
The debt ceiling is going to be a point of contention. I, for one, will not sign a clean bill raising the debt limit.
We're going to have to use the debt ceiling and the spending fight in September to demand that Biden do the right thing.
We're going to have to use this to demand he does the right thing, which means not doing it, in their view, would be the wrong thing. Which means, I hate to be logical on the news covering Washington, it means someone that they say is always right was doing the wrong thing, because under Trump, Republicans abandoned any effort to tie increases to the limit to cuts in federal spending. They just raised the roof. It's all here. We have the receipts. We've all lived through it. That was what, in Mr. Roy's telling, would be the wrong thing. And that's what the Republican Party was signed on to. Which is why, even though reporting sometimes involves showing you what they're saying, I cannot in good conscience tell you that what they're saying is true or reasonable. It's the opposite of a couple years ago when we were all here. Some of us were even paying attention. And then you have what many Republicans also just claimed a few months ago, what this election was going to be about, what they campaigned on in those midterms.
Inflation is outrageous. The border is open, and crime is rampant.
Lower the price of gas, lower that price of home heating bills.
We have the commitment to America. We literally spell out what we'll do. Make us energy independent. Give us an economy that's strong. Secure the border.
Those are actual policy goals, and I want to be as fair as possible. The point of elections and democracy is to put them up to a public vote and then come back into this town and figure out what you want to do about it, even if people still disagree. But what's happening right now, what is one of the very first priorities, is a completely admitted hostage strategy. Ted Cruz's leverage to do the very thing they didn't do when they had the power. Which means, in a very real sense, although I will be careful to point out that some of the goals that were just mentioned are legitimate policy goals that people can, as I said, just debate, the core priority here is not even pursuing those or dealing with inflation. It's getting political leverage to do things that they obviously don't think they could otherwise get done. Is that how you want to live? Well, let's bring in some of our Washington experts, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The Washington Post, Gene Robinson, and professor of politics and journalism at Morgan State University, Jason Johnson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good to be here, Ari.
Is it on the level, Gene?
On the level, how? I don't see much that's on the level. I mean, it's dangerous because messing around with the full faith and credit of the United States is obviously a dangerous thing to do. Just to threaten it is a dangerous thing for the U.S. economy, for the world economy. It destabilizes things. To actually go through with it is unthinkable. But they seem determined to take us to the brink, as they have done before. And, you know, given the composition of the Republican caucus now, this is a tough one. This would take a lot of skill that I don't know that Kevin McCarthy has to sort of finesse his conference, his caucus, into doing the right thing. Therefore, they may have to be circumvented.
Yeah. And Jason, I want to talk about why the facts matter here, why we led with recent history.
Right.
Let's be as fair as possible. If you're in the middle of the Vietnam War and you're using every possible mechanism to try to change it, peel back the troops and defund it, and you do that, even with extreme measures, and you say it's that important to save lives, then that is a position. People could still debate whether the credit's the way to do it, but that could be a consistent position.
Yeah.
But if the moment a different politician comes into town, you don't do that, then it wasn't about the war. Mm-hmm. And likewise, my question to you is, can anyone take seriously that this is about spending when they did it triple under Trump?
No. You know it's not about spending. You know it's about political leverage. And the part that makes it really obvious here is not just how disingenuous they are, but we have to remind the public that the debt ceiling isn't a real thing, right? Like, you can get rid of the debt ceiling if you want to continue with your, to continue with your metaphor, your musical metaphor from the beginning. They could follow the meth and red method and just tear the roof off, right? Like, they don't have to have a debt ceiling at all. The debt ceiling is maintained in part because people want to engage in this kind of political brinksmanship.
And so, you know, Gene Robinson is much more of a method man than red man. Because he's just more calm and reasoned, the voice.
Much more reasonable, much more reasonable.
Red man, I don't even know, he hasn't even been on the beat. I mean,
He's got a lot. Brick City needs to be here. but that's the thing. So we have to understand that all of this, these are contrived arguments, right? And if there's a good moral reason, then fine. But there isn't a good moral reason right now. We know that with McCarthy and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they're not pursuing any real policy. They just want to make Joe Biden look bad. And that's why this is problematic, even to the public, even if we end up suffering.
Right. But we have been here before. And it does not end up making anybody look bad but the Republican conference. In the end, that's what happens. I mean, it's what's happened before. It's going to happen again.
Well, that goes to the largest question, right? Which is, do they have leverage, Jason? Or to Gene's point, are they threatening to punch themselves in the face?
They always have leverage because at the end of the day, most Republicans are gerrymandered into districts where they're not really going to suffer any consequences. Now, now we currently have, what is it, about 18 Republicans who are in districts that Joe Biden won. So they could potentially get in trouble. But 2024 is a long ways off. So if you end up with a government shutdown, there's more than enough time to try and spend it and justify it and make Joe Biden look incompetent. At the end of the day, they'll probably come up with a deal. It'll be something that'll make the hard right of the Republicans feel happy, but it won't ultimately help the country. And Biden Biden's concern right now is he's got to look strong. If he sends Vice President Harris to do negotiation the way Obama used to do with him, I don't know that that's going to work well. Kevin McCarthy wants Joe Biden. He wants to have his face-to-face moment with Joe Biden so that he can look like he's strong and standing up to the president to his own caucus.
And Gene, I want to run one more thing by you because you've covered so many of these debates. You may remember when the Saturday Night Live iteration of Gerald Ford said, I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah.
And that's my that's my hope.
Yeah.
Every day I come into the newsroom. Not my forte.
Me too. Me too.
But I do want to just look at the actual numbers because there are many people, not just super right wingers, who say, well, wait a minute, does spending always go up and are my taxes too high? And that's, many people talk that way. And yet when you look at what's popular, there seems to be a real disconnect here. So reading from folks who do the math, if you actually take off the table cuts to the popular programs, Medicare, Social Security, veterans and defense spending, and again, Bush didn't get anywhere trying to cut those entitlements. And if you're not going to raise taxes, which is something Democrats say you could also do, then you'd have to actually slash 85% of the budget. To make it balance, and that is from the what we call the numbers people, a nonpartisan committee for a responsible federal budget.
This is lunacy. It does not make sense. And presumably, there are people in the Republican conference who understand those numbers and who know that this is a fantasy that they're preaching that you know you can slash and burn. They can't cut Medicare and Social Security. It's there'd be people with torches and pitchforks coming after them. And so, and you can't cut all discretionary spending, which is a lot of really important stuff that has to get done, but you can't cut 85% of that. It's just, it's ridiculous.
So Jason says, I want to tell people what's coming up. And part of what's coming up is something that you just walked in. First thing, Gene, I'm going to let people in behind the curtain. First thing Gene says to me is not talking about, you know, the debt ceiling. not talking about Congress. He says to me, that was an incredible young comic, The Impressionist last night.
He was phenomenal. He was as good as I've heard.
And you said, I didn't tell you to say that.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
You walked in talking about Matt Friend. So
Matt Friend.
I love that, which is what we're going to get to later in the show. So my thanks to Gene Robinson, who loves Matt Friend, a friend in the making. Jason stays. And let me tell everyone what's coming up. We have my debunking of Bill Barr again trying to spin what happened and why Donald Trump has legal pressure on him. I'm going to get into that tonight. And as discussed with Gene, our impressionist friend, Matt Friend, a lot of you guys responded last night. We have more on that, including behind the scenes, by the end of the hour. But first, an expert on the politics that could change everything when we're back after our shortest break, 60 seconds.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
When news breaks, go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app.
New developments in the legal drama surrounding former President Donald Trump.
Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows and hosts.
Lots of news of all kinds going on right now.
And the latest updates on the 2024 election.
The rematch is on. It's Trump-Biden Part 2.
Go beyond the what to understand the why. Download the app now at MSNBC.com/app.
The United States has been acquiring debt for 230 years. In the 4 years that Trump was president, 25% of that debt was accumulated. One quarter of the debt of the United States, 230 years, was accumulated in the 4 years that Trump was in power.
James Carver laying it out. Fact check, true. In those 4 years that Trump was in office, the nation's debt rose by far over $7 trillion. National debt hitting $31 trillion, which is 25% of all U.S. debt. This is sort of the chaser to the discussion we were just having at the top of the hour. And as promised, we break up the math. I'm never going to hit you with too much math unless I absolutely have to. But this is part two of the point. And boy, does it matter. And boy, does some of it scare Republicans who have an entire political message and apparently potentially debt crashing government strategy around people not understanding this basic math. And again, I'll go out of my way to say, you can have an honest debate about whether to raise taxes or lower federal spending in certain ways that are workable. But you cannot claim that this is somehow Biden's debt or Democratic debt. And I say that just as the person giving you the news. So take a look at this. Donald Trump added more to the national debt than Obama and Bush. And he is the rebels guy over there on the House floor. And that was after Bush increased government spending more than any of the six presidents preceding him, which included, of course, Democrats and the Great Society Democrat who did, at the time, increase government spending, LBJ, Great Society, all that stuff. What's different now is political. A Democrat's in the White House, so Republicans are complaining and threatening to crash the debt, refuse to raise the roof, the whole thing I told you. Now, as if that wasn't enough, Dayenu, behold what President Reagan said.
Congress consistently brings the government to the edge of default before facing its responsibility. This brinkmanship threatens the holders of government bonds and those who rely on Social Security and veteran benefits. Interest rates would skyrocket, instability would occur in financial markets, and the federal deficit would soar.
We've been here before. I'm joined now by a former Democratic senator from North Dakota, Byron Dorgan, who has spoken out about the truth of finances, about regulating Wall Street. You have been right from time to time. We've pointed that out in past reports. Thanks for joining me, Senator.
Happy to. I hope it's more than time to time, but we'll see.
Well, it can't be every time. Last time I checked, you're a human being, not an AI, you know, predictor. But but when you look at President Reagan there, was he right? And what might he say, in your view, to what the House Republicans are doing now?
He was right. But, you know, the debt substantially increased under President Reagan as well. But he's correct about that. Look, what the Republicans are doing here is it's an elaborate fraud. It's a repeat performance, of course. They've done it before. And the fact is, we do need to get our economic house in order. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. But the Republicans are saying the pressure we're going to use is we're going to say to people, if Democrats don't do what we want them to do, by the way, that includes probably cutting Social Security and Medicare, if Democrats mm-hmm. aren't willing to do that, we intend to decide we're not going to pay America's bills. I mean, that's just thoughtless banter that is so foolish and so dangerous to this country.
And you were in the Congress. Those are not new bills. Those are the bills they already agreed on.
That's right. It's what we've already spent. So the question is, are we a country that pays its bills? The answer has to be yes, of course. But I was listening to the description about Donald Trump. So you remember when Donald Trump said, look, I'm going to pay off the federal debt in 8 years. That's just a fact, he said. It's now $20 trillion. We're going to pay it off in 8 years. Well, in 4 years, he left, and it went from $20 trillion to $28 trillion, just like that. And you know what? All of those Republicans that are telling us about what's going on there, you know, you played most of these interviews, all of them voted for all this stuff. They voted for very big tax cuts so that 50 corporations, by the way, made $50 billion among them and paid zero in taxes. But they got big corporate tax cuts. It was a $2.3 trillion hit on federal deficits. And they also paid for various, well, they wanted to spend, and they did spend substantially more money on defense spending, in many cases, $60 and $80 billion in 1 year. And so the fact is, all of those folks that are now talking about not paying our bills are exactly the ones that have driven up this federal debt in a way that I think is dangerous. So we have to get our fiscal house in order. There's no question about that. But we should not ever decide, you know, we're okay if you are willing to shut down the government. We're not okay with that ever. We should never be okay with that. And we should say to them, we're not negotiating with you under this pretense. We're not going to let you shut down the government. And then we go from there and start seeing, are there responsible, sober people that are willing to sit down and talk about how we get this fiscal policy under some control?
There are hopefully some sober people in dry January, Senator, but I know what you mean. Let me play a little bit of George W. Bush on all this.
I sent Congress a request for emergency war funding that our troops urgently need. I'll work with Congress to pass a clean bill that funds our troops without handcuffing our commanders.
I want to bring you into that and Jason Johnson, who's also here. So first, Jason, these you will almost not recognize these other Republican presidents.
Right. Well, because no one's paying attention to history. Right. History would show us that you have Reagan, you have several presidents who've said, look, this is not a good idea, but the Republicans keep going along with it anyway. That is part of the issue that we have here. But the other thing is this. We have to make sure that the public understands that some of the metaphors that are being used are also wrong. They always say, hey, if you have a family budget, blah, 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 you can't put a cap on your kids. Right? I mean, you really can't put a cap on your kids. Kids are expensive. This country is expensive to run. That is why we usually end up raising the debt ceiling. So the fundamental way that Americans understand this also has to be changed. That's the way we can break through some of the disingenuous Republican rhetoric.
Yeah. Senator?
I agree with that. In fact, one of the people that you had on as, in an interview said, let's get back to regular finances. Well, you know what regular finances is? That you pay your bills. You just pay your bills. And if you decide that this country will not, cannot, and should not pay its bills until somehow the Republican leaders decide to bludgeon the Biden administration, that's a horrible thing. I mean, it's really going to injure this country's economy in a dramatic way. The last time this happened, as you know, our credit rating took a hit. And I've been through a number of these shutdowns. The first one was the Gingrich shutdown. And, you know, that lasted for some lengthy period. But none of these so-called shutdowns, and certainly never would deciding not to pay your bills, none of them make any sense at all. That's not thoughtful public policy by people that care about this country's best interests.
Senator, are there any lessons, because we mentioned and people remember this with Obama and other face-offs, is there lessons here in how the Democrats and the administration should deal with this?
Well, I hope the first lesson is do not cave in to people that are going to do to you what Senator Cruz and others are pledging to try to do. Don't cave into that because it's wrong for the country. But these are very difficult. And the fact is we have a Congress with very narrow margins, as you know, in both the House and the Senate, very little bipartisanship, very little interest by people of compromising, which is the lubrication of democracy. It's always been the lubrication of democracy when we compromise and decide, let's find the middle ground here to see if we can do the right thing. But the middle ground should never be that our country decides not to pay its debts, ever.
Understood. Senator Dorgan, always good to see you. Jason Johnson, in more than one segment, appreciate you. And let me remind everyone what we have coming up. I mentioned this great comedian, Your Responses. That's coming up later tonight in the show. By the end of the hour, we like to have some fun. But next, we deal with and debunk Bill Barr's new spin about important matters, which include the legal pressure on Donald Trump right now. Stay with us.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Get the latest updates on this year's high-stakes election with MSNBC's How to Win 2024 newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll get expert analysis on key races sent straight to your inbox, including articles written by the host of the How to Win podcast, Jennifer Palmieri. Subscribe today at msnbc.com/win.
The first draft of history, it's not always correct, especially when the government lies to you. Which brings us now tonight to a pivotal period in our recent era, the conclusion of that highly anticipated Mueller probe. You follow the news, you're watching the news right now, so you may remember that whole period. Different Trump figures went down. They were searched, indicted, convicted. And then Mueller turned in his detailed report to the DOJ, but it did not immediately go out to the public. Many expected the report to put some heat on the administration and pressure then Attorney General Barr to release it rather than simply hide it. But he had a different trick up his sleeve, a middle ground that actually matters in the news tonight, and I'll explain why. Barr infamously scooped the entire Mueller report with his own misleading summary. It was so clearly off the mark that Mueller took the rare step of writing Barr, nominally his supervisor, to call out the deceit about the true nature and context of the entire report that he spent so long creating and investigating and writing. Now, that was then. This is now. Long time since then, especially the way the news has been lately. But Barr hasn't faced much serious questioning about what he did. That's partly because, like many people in and around government, he tries to stick to friendly environments when he wants to get his message out, Fox News appearances, and, of course, the occasional legally required deposition, like when he went in and testified to the January 6th committee and under oath suddenly started talking about why Trump was a liar and lied about the election. But here's what's different right now, if you haven't seen it yet. Barr just went on Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO and took some questions and tried to spin his spin on the Mueller report, claiming that that whole unusual PR stunt with his cover letter was somehow, and this is false, he claimed the only choice he had. And then he blamed Mueller for how the report came in.
I said, you have to give me a report that I can make public quickly. It has to be redacted. Because the day you give me the report, everyone's going to be speculating.
You have to give it this way, or people will speculate. OMG. Two problems there. One, Mueller's team did prepare a version for public release. And even if the DOJ wanted to take any time for an extra review, that, of course, is the version that essentially came out later. There were some redactions and some fights over it, but 90-plus percent of it was what they gave him. And second, Barr is claiming that public speculation is the reason that he, the powerful attorney general, had to rush out his take. Now, that is false. The DOJ stays quiet or waits on many different topics or cases while the public, in a free society, speculates. And the press sometimes speculates. And that does not create any obligation for anyone in government to do anything, nor should it. Public speculation is not a legal or logical reason for Barr to rush anything. And boy, did he rush. He rushed it right out this weekend. Now, let me give you one example. There is plenty of speculation about how Jeffrey Epstein died in a federal prison. Who was in charge? Bill Barr. That was on Bill Barr's watch. And you don't see Mr. Barr, while in government or out of government, rushing out a ton of information, transparency, or claims about that mysterious and controversial death just because of, quote, speculation. We call bull, Mr. Barr. Now, in this new interview, Mr. Maher pushes back and Mr. Barr continues with his spin and defends how he issued his own purported legal conclusions that had very real consequences and really scooped the Mueller report.
I read he did give you that.
No, he did not. Okay. So when he came in, and by the way, there was no pressure for him to give in on any day certain. He could have taken his time and redacted it. He came in and they gave us on Friday the report unredacted. It was illegal to put it out. I felt that I had to say something to give the bottom line of what he decided. Number one, I said he found there was no collusion. It's like going out and announcing a verdict. I didn't regale the whole trial, but I said there was no collusion.
Well, you framed it as he was innocent, and then everything else had argued against that.
And
well,
then
he said we can't come to the conclusion that he didn't obstruct justice, and you said he didn't obstruct justice.
Now, Barr is being tricky there, and this is important for the record in the world. Barr knows any call about presidential lawbreaking in this type of probe goes to Congress. It doesn't go to the president's own appointed AG. That's why Ken Starr sent his famous findings to Congress. And then, as we know from all of the recent impeachments, Congress can decide whether or not to impeach. Indeed, it's worth remembering that Democratic Congress declined to impeach on the evidence in the Mueller report. And then, of course, Trump did other things that led to his historic two impeachments. Now, Mueller was working along the same lines as Starr. Evidence of presidential lawbreaking, going to Congress. And there was a contrast here in what he said and what Barr tried to spin. Now, Barr's misleading approach is also about more than those legal nuances. And I want to get this down for the record tonight, too. because it matters. Mr. Barr used his power to mislead and to muddy the waters. Now, there's no evidence that he broke any laws. We're not talking about some crime. We are talking about an abuse of the authority that he had in a very lawyerly and devious way. Indeed, in those very first few hours when this Barr letter dropped, Mr. Barr got headline writers and even some TV networks to wrongly treat the Barr summary as if it captured the Mueller report itself. To pick one headline, and Politico is not alone, but I just want to show you how this works so you don't get tricked the next time, and so Mr. Barr might not get away with it or people like him. Politico's headline said, Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy. They made the mistake of taking the Barr summary and treating it as the Mueller report, which it was not. So when you see how this trick works, you might actually be a part of the fact-based community that makes it harder for the government to lie to us next time. And I will tell you how we dealt with this. I remember rushing to the newsroom when that Barr summary dropped. I remember already seeing those fast reactions online on Twitter and some of those headlines I just mentioned that seemed to really potentially misunderstand, which is different, right, than joining the deceit. Sometimes people just get tricked, especially in this town where everyone's rushing out to have a smart and fast take. And in our breaking news that day, I can tell you, we got on the air and reported how the material, whatever it said, was Barr material. It was only the Barr letter. It was not the entire Mueller report. Not the Mueller report everyone's been waiting for. This is 4 pages. There's not a single full sentence in here that's quoted the Mueller report. The most important parts of this letter are the direct quotes from the Mueller report. Everything else is Barr's views. I would note 4 sentences that are in the letter that are attributed to the Mueller report. Not a single one of them is a complete sentence. No complete sentences. That was suspicious. If you ever want to get inside the mind of the reporters, and we all work together, we have a big team here, we work hard together. Sometimes we have these conversations and say, well, can we say that it's a lie? Not responsibly, because I didn't have the underlying Mueller report. I could just try to tell you that Mr. Barr had his own troubled record. And if there were full sentences in the report that Mr. Barr thought were so true or helpful to, obviously, the person he thought of wrongly as his client, Donald Trump, he might have done a whole sentence. So, do I repeat myself? Yes, occupational hazard. But this matters. There's a great saying on the internet, don't feed the trolls. The trolls are the people who just want to upset you or lie or comment on a picture to get you upset. You don't feed them. You don't respond to them. We need that right now. We also need a new saying or a related one. Don't reward the liars. This was a very clear case study and how somebody powerful with selective access to information could spin a whole town, and there were consequences. But it need not happen again. Those are my 2 cents on Mr. Barr. He got his word out, we got ours. And of course, he's invited to come on and address all this directly if he's doing more interviews. Let me tell you what else is coming up. Rupert Murdoch, under real legal heat, facing this potentially billion-dollar set of fines or sanctions if they lose the defamation case. We have an update on that and these calls to criminally charge Memphis police officers after a man died in an excessive force stop. That's next with Maya Wiley. Turning to calls for accountability and the stories we've told you we will stay on, there are questions about whether 5 Memphis police officers may face criminal charges. In a tough case, 29-year-old Tyree Nichols died after being pulled over. This was on January 7th. The concern was stated as alleged reckless driving. In other words, a traffic stop. Now, here is what he looked like in the hospital after those cops were through with him. Now, this disturbing photo, which we're showing you because his family released it because they wanted the world to see the situation, is part of the criminal evidence now. He would go on to die 3 days after this photo was taken. Now, there's been a lot of pressure in the community. There is an internal investigation underway. Those officers were initially suspended, then terminated. A probe has found that they used, quote, excessive force and then did not render aid to this individual who was so badly hurt that, as reported, he later died. Now, there was an autopsy requested by the family, which showed that Nichols suffered extensive bleeding caused by a severe beating. A federal civil rights investigation is now also underway.
The Department of Justice cares deeply about potential violations of constitutional rights here in Memphis and throughout America. This federal civil rights investigation will be thorough, it will be methodical, and it will continue until we gather all the relevant facts.
That is what the feds are doing. They would presumably be able to get the body cam footage and other information. That footage we know exists, but has not yet been made public. State officials say it could be released out as soon as this week or next week. Now, the reason, again, we know about this, and I want to tell you about our sourcing as we cover this kind of story, is that the family and their lawyers saw it, some family members seeing part of it, and describing it as appalling, deplorable, and heinous.
He was a human piñata for those police officers. It was an unadulterated, unabashed, nonstop beating of this young boy for 3 minutes.
Oh, my God.
We're joined now by Maya Wiley, CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, who also worked in civilian oversight of the NYPD. Welcome back. This is a grim process, but as I emphasized, the family wants to make sure people know what they say happened. We don't have the video yet. Much of the evidence at this point looks like alleged abuse of force, a crime, or, depending on how the death is ruled, a homicide. What do you see in this case, and what happens next with the video, which we've seen in different localities, comes out maybe late or never?
Well, I will say the first thing I see in this case is a grieving mother.
Yeah.
And one in which I will say tonight, there are black women all over this country who, if they haven't been in that position, are saying, once again, I fear for my children. So that's number one. In terms of the case itself, here's the thing. The most important, I call it evidence, I don't mean it's evidence, but it can be used, is that the police department itself not only fired them, but has put out a public statement making a determination that it was excessive force, and they didn't intervene. That is rare, unusual, and dramatic.
I'll pause you on that, because while it may sound straightforward, someone would say, well, again, based on the evidence we have, and in a trial this would be adjudicated, but it looks like this beating that led to a death. But to your point, we have heard from countless police leaders that they cannot say anything, that they cannot comment, that they have to wait. You're getting at an important point, which is that's not true. Why is that important?
It's important because so often police departments close ranks. They often have agreements with their police unions that give police officers much more protection from investigation than you or I would get if we were in a similar situation. And that usually means they hold off and say, we can't say anything or even take action, disciplinary action against police officers, until there's a full and final investigation. So to have a police department move so quickly and definitively, including termination, as well as that public statement, that is a statement that they are saying they violated their own rules, regulations, training, it was excessive force, and that they did not intervene to stop, those officers did not continue to,
right,
to stop the excessive force. That, I'm just going to say, that right there is an indicator to me that this footage and whatever else they had uncovered, including the autopsy report, it's very strong evidence.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it extremely strong, potentially probative, and it's distinct from the fact that if charged, these people are legally presumed innocent, but the police are saying, the police leaders are saying they shouldn't be police. You mentioned mothers. I want to play a little bit more from Ms. Wells, the mother.
I watched about a minute of it, but I couldn't. Once I heard my son say, what did I do? I lost it, and I couldn't.
No father, mother should have to witness what I saw today.
3 minutes, Ari. 3 minutes. That's how long we have heard that he was beaten for 3 minutes. That is an extremely long time. And what we're also hearing from the family is his question was, what did I do? We know that traffic stops are one of the places in which Black people in particular are more likely to suffer violence or death, even if they don't have a weapon. Philandro Castile being one of the most obvious. And I think what we are hearing from these parents is they saw the evidence that we have not yet seen. And they're saying that it was devastating. Yeah. Of course, they're family members, but they're also intelligent people. And it does say something that their lawyers were also repeating some of the things from the footage.
Right. And let's see the video. And we've seen this in the data, although people respond to personal stories. These are traffic stops where the harm and now the potential crime are because the police showed up and did it. That's the issue. I'm over on time, but I appreciate you always being here on these issues. Thank you, Maya.
Thank you, Ari.
And it's a tough one, but important. When we come back, an update on what could be $1 billion-plus fine for Rupert Murdoch's empire. The head of the Fox News empire, Rupert Murdoch, is facing heat, and he went under oath in this $1 billion lawsuit over alleged lies by Fox, including allegations that Murdoch knew and continued to support the airing of those lies, that he called the shots directly. While Sean Hannity, forced under oath in the same case, admitted that he didn't believe Trump's lies, quote, for 1 second. We're seeing the fallout, and with a move that really could come right out of the fictional character on HBO's Succession, Murdoch had planned to recombine his media empire, but under this and other pressures right now, we are seeing him backing off what was a planned and proposed merger. Now, one Wall Street analyst says all of the legal uncertainty and expenses make it too risky. And the defamation suit was a, quote, meaningful obstacle to getting the extended family's approval of this Fox News Corp relationship. Now, that is one person's take among many, but there is a clear sign that even before the resolution of this case, it is already constraining aspects of the Fox empire. Now, in a way, we end where we began. I mentioned this when Gene Robinson walked onto the set and was talking to me about this amazing impressionist, an exclusive, if you will, with a fake Trump last night, comedian Matt Friend. So a lot of you reached out. A lot of you online said you loved it. I'm going to show you something new now. A little bit of him last night, if you missed that, as well as something we've never aired before, which was some of our behind the scenes that we posted online of the comic.
You see what he's doing? Do all these people watching? And what you're doing, it's so disgusting. And you know that.
Because there was no storming.
There was no storming.
Okay, a lot of people were saying they're going to go. We're going to send him home like a dog. We're going to send him home.
I never thought I would say this at the end of an interview, but can we get one more China?
China, okay?
We love that.
Excuse me, stop, look at the people laughing. It's so disgusting, this whole crew, there was no storming, and frankly, he is spreading massive fraud and dominion, China, run to Biden, thank you very much. Stormy Daniels!
He's amazing. His name is Matt Friend. You can follow him on TikTok at The Matt Friend. I know Gene Robinson did. You can always follow me on TikTok or any social media at Ari Melber. And as I've told you, the best way to connect with me or subscribe for my writing is go to arimelber.com. And again, one more shout out at The Matt Friend. That's where we found him. We found him on TikTok. He's a funny guy. Uncanny, the impression. I know a lot of you guys, people reached out and said, who is that kid? 24 years old, maybe a bright future ahead. We can use the uplift where we get it.